Tuesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in our second half hour, scheduled to have live with us U.S. Congressman Steve King of Iowa's 4th District, and we'll be including as many questions from you as possible. We have about 20, 22, 23 minutes with the congressman. That coming up at half past the hour. But first, redistricting. That happens after each census. And if you remember, Iowa lost one congressional district. It happened in 2013 based on the results of the census in 2010. Before that, Iowa had five districts. Now we only have four districts, and that means we have four members of the House of Representatives in Washington. Tomorrow evening, the University of Iowa Public Policy Center is presenting another panel discussion in its Forkenbrock series on public policy. Its title is Redistricting Polarizing America. So this half hour, we want to talk with two of the participants about redistricting and how that process has shaped our politics in recent years. Joining us, Tracy Osborne, Associate Professor in Political Science at the University of Iowa, also Director of the Politics and Policy Program at the PPC. Tracy, welcome to our program.
Thanks.
Dave Osborne is with us as well. He joins us by phone. He's one of the participants, a former editor-in-chief of Salon Magazine. His work has appeared in a number of national publications. He's also an author. Dave Daly, welcome to you.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me here, Ben.
Tracy Osborne, let me start with you. Get us up to speed on the fundamentals, a little bit more about redistricting, the reason we do it, and the thinking behind it.
Sure. So back in the 1960s, the Supreme Court decided that everyone's vote had to be equal. And what that meant was that they had, when they redraw the congressional districts, they all have to have basically the same population. But that's up to the states. And so the states get to decide exactly how they're going to draw those districts. So you can envision a state and you can really envision the many ways you could draw it to kind of do what you wanted to with those districts. And that's where we get the term gerrymandering. So gerrymandering is drawing the districts deliberately to help or to hurt a certain group. So here in Iowa, we're actually really unusual. We redistrict by an independent commission that is explicitly nonpartisan. So by state law, they cannot use partisan data. So what that means is they really redraw. They don't care where the representative lives. They don't actually care where the partisans live. And that's why we saw some controversy when we lost that seat in the last redistricting round. But a lot of other states allow their state legislature to redraw the lines, which means that the state legislature, whoever controls it, whichever party, has a lot of say over who's going to have how many seats, and that's where the problem comes in.
Mm-hmm. And so we saw in 2010, after that census, the Republicans in 2010 had a good turnout. They did well in that election, and you're saying and that made a big difference in a lot of states.
Absolutely, because that meant they controlled the redistricting process to draw the state legislative lines and the congressional lines.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Iowa's latest four districts, basically sort of four quadrants, the four corners of the state. Not quite that, but pretty much that. So Iowa's looking at it, we can say Iowa is rare in the country.
Absolutely.
How rare?
They are one of a kind. So independent redistricting commissions do exist in other places, but a lot of times they are sort of balanced partisan instead of nonpartisan. So an example is California. In 2008, they went to a retired judges commission and some citizens. It's very complicated. So I would say, you know, Google for details. But it's pretty rare. Most states do it by state legislature.
Dave Daly, let's talk a little bit, and later I want, of course, before we end our conversation, to get into possible remedies. But I know in a book that you had that came out last year with the subtitle, has a word I can't say on the air, but the subtitle says it all, How the Democrats Won the Presidency but Lost America. So this is back in 2016. The central focus of your book is what is called the GOP Red Map Redistricting Plan. How does this fit in with sort of the fundamentals that Tracy has laid out for us?
She's laid it out perfectly. I think that, and Iowa, it's a pleasure to be having this conversation in Iowa because Iowa really is the redistricting unicorn. You all get it exactly right there, and it's a, you know, it's a pleasure to have a civic culture that sort of understands the importance that these district lines are really the building blocks of our democracy. And when they get twisted for partisan purposes, it takes our entire democracy in directions that are extreme, and it insulates politicians from the ballot box and the will of the voters. Gerrymandering goes back to the beginning of the country. You can trace it back to Patrick Henry trying to rig a race in Virginia in the very first Congress between James Madison and James Monroe. It has always been a part of us. What the Republicans do in 2010, however, is reinvent the game. If you all are familiar with Moneyball and baseball, kind of how baseball teams realized that there were loopholes within the system that could be exploited. And what the Republicans realized in 2010 is that state legislatures control not only redistricting of their own states, but they also control the redistricting of all of these congressional seats. Mm-hmm. And that in a closely divided country, many of these chambers are very, very close, and you could tilt control for not a lot of money. So the Republicans come up with a plan called Red Map. They invest $30 million in it. And the goal of this is to take control of as many chambers of state legislatures as they can across the country, some of which were only within, you know, two or three seats of doing this. So for $100,000 here, for $250,000 in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and North Carolina, you could take over control of the entire chamber. You could have complete control of redistricting, and you could draw whatever kind of lines you want. And by 2010, the technology is so good and our partisanship has become so hardened that it is really, really easy to draw virtually impregnable lines. Mm-hmm. And what you have seen over the last 6 years is very little movement in Congress in the states that have been redistricted in this way, and much more Republican control of state legislatures.
And so following your line of thinking, the more the safer a district is in the hands of any congressman, be it a Democrat or a Republican, the less that Republican or Democrat, that office holder, has to pay attention to what with the constituency? Or
I think that's exactly right. I think it's almost even worse than that. I think that when you are representing a district that is drawn so that you can't lose it, the only group you're really responsible to is the extreme base of that party, because the only way you can lose is if you face a primary challenge. You do not have to talk to the middle. You do not have to talk to the other side. You have to be sure that your base is completely okay with you and that nobody can get to your left or to your right. And to win a primary challenge, because a primary challenge has a smaller electorate, a more active piece of the party base, is usually held, over the summers, so turnout is smaller.
Uh-huh.
And it affects the kinds of people we send to Washington, and then it affects their willingness to work with the other side and compromise.
So, Tracy, back to you. Unlike the House of Representatives, the Senate is not based on – I mean, you referred to this 1960s Supreme mm-hmm. Court ruling. Of course, the Senate – all votes are not equal when we look at the Senate. We look at a state like Wyoming, little population, two senators. Look at a state like California, huge population in comparison, still two senators. So the Supreme Court said that's okay for the Senate, but it has to be different for the House of Representatives?
They did, and that's actually one of the most interesting things, where they demanded that states change their state Senate. So states have to redistrict their Senate and their House. They're not allowed to have a malapportioned legislature like the Senate, but the Constitution says you can't take away a state's two senators without their consent. So what state's going to be okay with that?
And Dave, going back to the topic of your book, that explains how the Democrats at one point had a nice majority in the Senate, but the House of Representatives was still deemed untouchable in 2012 or so.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's really hard to gerrymander the U.S. Senate. I mean, there are ways to try to affect the votes, and what a lot of these gerrymandered legislatures do is then pass voting restriction laws that then try to affect the outcome of statewide races. But I mean, that's a different ball of wax in some ways. What you see in 2012 is that the Democrats take the U.S. Senate. Barack Obama is reelected. Democrats get 1.4 million more votes than Republicans in the aggregate nationwide for House of Representatives seats. but the Republicans hold on to a 234-201 majority. That's even starker when you look at sort of the key swing states in American politics. Mm-hmm. Ohio, where the Republicans have a 12-4 advantage. Pennsylvania, where Republicans have a 13-5 advantage. North Carolina, where it's 10-3. Michigan, where it's 9-5. You take a look at sort of all of these bluish, purplish states and the delegations that they send to Washington. When you add them up, it's 2-1 Republican, and that has a lot to do with the way the lines were drawn after 2010.
You just joined us. Dave Daly is with me, former editor-in-chief of Salon Magazine. He's written for a number of national publications, also a book author. Tracy Osborne, associate professor in political science at the University of Iowa, director of the Politics and Policy Program at the PPC. They're in two participants in a panel discussion tomorrow night at the University of Iowa titled, Is Redistricting Polarizing America? So let's talk. There's a couple ways I want to go here. But first of all, let me talk about, ask Tracy, aren't there any checks on this? I mean, can you gerrymander something so that you are in so solid, if you are the party in power, isn't there a court, say, that can tell, wait, and where is the line when they say, no, that's too far and that's okay?
Well, so far the Supreme Court hasn't drawn that line. They have considered some cases. You might remember the Texas case where they redistricted Tom DeLay's advice back in the kind of mid-2000s. And the Democrats were so mad they ran to New Mexico for a month to try to avoid the vote. But, you know, even though that case went to the Supreme Court has sort of opened the door saying we could imagine a case where partisan gerrymandering goes too far, but we haven't found it yet. Interestingly, there's a case sitting in the court right now in the Supreme Court about Wisconsin where the lower court has said, you know, this is too much partisan gerrymandering. And they've actually come up with this measure of trying to figure out, you know, are the parties wasting sort of equal numbers of votes, or, you know, is one party kind of utilizing all their votes really well and the other one's just wasting them left and right?
Yeah.
So if this case, you know, if the Supreme Court upholds that ruling, this is a huge watershed moment in partisan gerrymandering. So, I mean, that's part of why this panel is so timely.
Mm-hmm. Dave Daly, when we look at gerrymandering on a spectrum of minor to egregious, is there any place that it makes sense to draw a line, this works and this is just too far?
Yes. I mean, I think we have to keep in mind that we want competitive districts, we want politicians not to be insulated from the ballot box, and we want to see true contests. One of the things you are seeing is that every single election cycle under these maps in state legislatures nationwide, the number of uncontested seats is soaring. In North Carolina this year, where there's been, you know, protests for going back years now, that the Moral Monday protests, 57 of the 120 seats for North Carolina's lower house were uncontested. In Wisconsin, it was 47 of 99 seats in this last election, completely uncontested. These are members of both parties looking at these races saying, I can't win that. So as a result, there is no dialogue. There's no debate, and there's no way to hold representatives accountable for their votes. And what you have seen, according to the political scientists who have measured this, is that the 2010 lines are, in most cases, three times as partisan as the ones that were drawn in 2000. This is the work of Michael Latner at Cal Poly SLO, which has been a groundbreaking on this.
Mm-hmm.
You see that all of these states in which control of their local houses and control of their congressional delegations once swung back and forth, it's no longer swinging. The pendulum is stuck on one side, and that's not good for a democracy.
Mm-hmm. We have about 5 minutes left. Let's look toward the future, the next census, 2020. Is that our next juncture when there could be a fix, a remedy here, or are we just going to say, well, maybe the Democrats will have a swing election in 2020, When that census is there, they'll get to in the states, and it's at a state level that we're thinking about, right, Tracy?
Yes,
that
absolutely.
That the state level, the national election, because it's the state entities, not in Iowa, especially because it's nonpartisan, but in most states that have those levers of power. And so, what do you see in the future? How do we remedy this if we deem it to be undesirable? Which, according to polls, when we look at favorability, unfavorability towards our Congress, we're not happy.
Right. Most definitely. You know, that Supreme Court case I mentioned, I think, is a big part of the future. You know, if the Supreme Court starts to, you know, put a hammer down on partisan redistricting, that could really change what goes on. The other thing is states are increasingly moving toward these kinds of independent commissions. Their outcome is really debatable. You know, California at first had a lot of competition after changing the way they did it, and then that's kind of died off a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, is redistricting the only thing we need to change, or are there other things that go along with this?
Mm-hmm. What do you see when you look in the future, Dave Daly, about a way to more competitive districts and better representative democracy?
I think Tracy's exactly right, first of all, about the Wisconsin case going to the Supreme Court. This case is tailor-made for Justice Kennedy to be the fifth swing vote, which he is, regardless of whether a Justice Gorsuch is confirmed. If Justice Kennedy sees that this is a workable standard to fix partisan gerrymandering, this would be the first time that the Supreme Court draws a bright line.
Have they heard that case? Have they heard that case yet, or just agreed to hear it?
They've agreed to hear it. I don't think they've heard it yet. Is that right, Dave?
They have not heard it yet, but if they take it up and if Justice Kennedy is amenable to this solution, this is huge news. I am less optimistic on the electoral front because I think that in order for the Democrats to get a seat back at the table in many of these states, it's so hard because Republicans have got super majorities in most of these states, and it's going to take not just a swing election, but you know, an earthquake election to actually fix it. There are, however, a bunch of big state governors' races in 2017 and in 2018. 2017 is Virginia, and 2018 you have governors' races in Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Wisconsin that are key, because if the Democrats can take those seats, they would have a seat at the table in 2020, a seat they did not have in 2010. If the Democrats lose those elections, the governor's races, it's really hard to imagine a realistic scenario under which they take a legislative chamber and get themselves a seat at the table. So you could be looking at these maps being in play for another 10 years after this, with the technology only getting better. I mean, I think that this is a real crisis moment and that we ought to be thinking very, very seriously about how to move forward in a fair way.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you mentioned earlier, Dave, about in, was it the 2014 election, the popular vote being in favor of the Democrats, even though the Republicans won out in terms of the number of seats. And this is due in large part, you say, to gerrymandering here. We had in our last election the electoral vote turnout. And I know these are two different things, but I want to see if there's a relation here. The electoral vote turnout in favor of Donald Trump when the popular vote was very clearly, except in our president's mind, in favor of Hillary Clinton. Is there any relation here between what you two were talking about and that?
Yes, I think there is. Because if you think about this, the states that tipped the presidency to Donald Trump are some of the most gerrymandered states in the country. What we're talking about are Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and in some ways North Carolina, and also Florida. Those states have in common that they are severely gerrymandered, that they are bluish-purplish states, mostly, especially as far as how they voted for president over the years. But they all have in common supermajorities of Republican control that have in the last to 5 years passed really stringent voter ID and voter restriction bills that had dramatic impact in driving down the African American and the Democratic vote in many of these states. I mean, Donald Trump's margin in Wisconsin is only about 20,000. It is assumed that the voter ID laws kept twice as many of those people away from the polls as made the margin of difference. So I think it is a connection that is complex to make. You have to say that these gerrymandered legislatures then take actions that make it harder for people to vote and affect future outcomes.
Mm-hmm. A quick word before we go, perhaps specifically about Iowa. I don't know. We have your example. You turned to Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio, Dave. But in Iowa, we have this unicorn of a model system here. But nevertheless, you know, Iowa went for Donald Trump almost by 10 points. Mm-hmm. So doesn't that sort of does that dispute your destroy your theory in any way, Dave?
No, I don't. I don't think so. I think elections have consequences, and they should have consequences. But every election ought to have a consequence. It's not enough that the 2010 election has a consequence. 2012, 14, 16, all of them ought to matter and then swing back and forth. That the people of Iowa went for Donald Trump in 2016 is entirely within their right. Trick becomes when you don't have control of the ballot box to turn it the other way. What you see in Iowa right now is complete, I believe, control by the
unified government for the first time in about 20 years. Yep.
Because your districts are fairly drawn, if people don't like what the Republicans do, and I read the other day that a bunch of public service unions are
running out of time. Quickly, if I could ask you, Dave. Yep.
Absolutely. What is important is that the voters control the politicians and not that the politicians control the voters. And in states where redistricting is a severe partisan problem, it's the other way around.
Okay, Dave Daly, thank you very much. Tracy Osborne, you'll be moderating this panel tomorrow evening, 5:30, I think, is the start time at the University of Iowa. It's a University of Iowa Public Policy Center presenting another panel discussion in its Fork and Brock series on public policy. Is redistricting polarizing America? It's just open to the public, right, Tracy?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tracy Osborne of the University of Iowa. Dave Daly, former editor-in-chief of Salon Magazine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, I'll be joined live by U.S. Representative Steve King of Iowa's 4th District. It's River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer.